The content shared on Your Life, Your Wealth Network reflects the views of the host and guests of the program only and are not necessarily the views of Cordasco Financial Network or its advisors. This media production is educational in nature and should not be construed as financial, legal, or tax advice or a solicitation or presentation of sale of any financial products or services. Please consult a professional prior to making any financial, tax, or legal decision.
Welcome to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network, helping you find clarity and comfort for your life and wealth.
Hey, welcome to the Your Life, Your Wealth podcast. I'm John Walker from the Cordasco Financial Network, a part of Mercer Advisors. Thrilled to be back with you again this week to tackle what I think is a really important topic. Read a great article in Kiplinger the other day about planning around special needs and special needs trusts. Lo and behold, it was authored by one of my great colleagues. So I have the pleasure of actually inviting in a great guest that'll be with me momentarily to tackle this topic of special needs trusts, planning for folks that have challenges. And the name belies special, that it's maybe something that would be used infrequently or rarely. And in fact, that couldn't be further from what the reality of the situation is. In fact, I was startled to understand that the issue of disability in our society, whether it's cognitive, physically, otherwise, is quite surprising. The CDC actually estimates that 61 million adults in the US live with a significant disability, which I was staggered to understand. That's over 1 in 4 adults nationwide who have some sort of disability, whether it's a mobility impairment, an intellectual disability, developmental disabilities from brain injuries or mental illness or other various chronic conditions that could lead to some need for support. That is not even accounting for any of the recent impact of things like COVID and other things that could lead to disability in the future. So it's something that is an absolutely underserved or under-acknowledged part of the planning work that we do to support the people that we help with. So I'm thrilled to welcome in to tackle this topic one of our in-house experts on this, someone who has great passion and expertise around this. So let me welcome Mr. Chris Curran, CFP, and one of our great senior wealth advisors out of our Dallas-Fort Worth area branch. Chris, thanks so much for joining me on the program to tackle this.
Hey, John, I'm happy to be here with you today and looking forward to the conversation.
Chris, I know that this is not something that's staggering to you because you help clients with it every day of tackling this idea of how do you actually plan? How do you address some of this, what many people consider a niche group of individuals and families? But as I'm learning myself here, that it's really much more prevalent than even I realize, right? This is something that many families are needing to address or maybe don't realize. Maybe that's the better way of framing it. They don't realize that this is something that they potentially need to address.
Yeah, I think the numbers that you mentioned from CDC, this is a fairly common thing and becoming more so. And it's just a natural outgrowth of the world that we inhabit, right? Advances in medical technology are extending the lifespan that we have, and there are young babies that are born with conditions that would have been fatal 10, 20, 30 years ago, who are now able to get medical care that allows them to thrive, to grow, and to enroll in school, and to be included in an educational curriculum and grow up, go out into the community, become included in the community, work, and become a real part of society. So we're adding people with significant differences at both ends of the lifespan, right? Young kiddos and more of us are living longer, right? If we drink and smoke less, exercise more, right?
Eat healthier diets, right?
Right.
And with advances in technology, right? I think that's such a great point. Things that we don't necessarily account for that have become sort of societal norms, right? That we just kind of assume are the way things always were, weren't always this way, right? People didn't live as long, they didn't have the care. And so disabilities or challenges are presenting themselves in an aging demographic. And as you point out, with young folks who may not have had the outcomes that they are able to have today, generations ago, they wouldn't have survived or they wouldn't have been treated the way that they are today or able to do some of the things that they're able to do today.
Yep. Right. And so when you think of, about this, right, you guys like me who used to die quickly and cheaply on the sidewalk the first time a stroke or a heart attack got us, we now are living long enough that something else will disable us before we make our exit. And so when you have that kind of extension of lifespan, there are costs associated with that. And those extra costs require planning.
Absolutely. And I'm going to steal a line from you that really resonated with me. And we've talked about this, which is that the outcome that we're looking for when we're doing effective planning here, right, is not simply, and this is almost verbatim what you say in the piece, is like not to secure the financial future, merely to secure basically the financial future of the person, but also to create a meaningful, fulfilling life for that person. And I think that's the differentiator when we talk about the way we approach planning here. And I'd love for you to share some of your insight around, because in many cases, right, some of the needs-based planning that happens here is simply, okay, I'm raising a child that maybe has some differences and I want to make sure that they're taken care of if something happens to me. So I purchase a really big life insurance policy and I set up a trust. And then if I get hit by a bus tomorrow, they'll have $2 million in a pot that they'll take care of them for the rest of their life. Right. And that's sort of where the planning stops. And from my learning with you, there is so much more to the process, so many more options, so many more facilities, you know, whether it's government support programs, but actually creating a plan that actually helps sustain a meaningful outcome. Help me understand that. Let's walk through kind of how you approach it. I believe you start with sort of preventing worst case, right, is where you begin and then improve on that. Is that fair?
Yeah. I think there are two phases to the process. The first one you can think of as being disaster prevention. And the second one is that process of creating a meaningful, worthwhile life or providing the means to do that. So we can start with the first and kind of address that. One of the peculiar things about the public benefits support system that we have in the United States is that there's sort of four basic programs that provide different types of support for individuals: the Social Security program, Medicare program, which we're all familiar with, and those are insurance programs that you pay into. You pay your premiums through deductions on your paychecks for the most part, and then you have retirement benefits and you have healthcare after you retire as well. So there are two other programs that for people with disabilities form another couple of cornerstones for the foundation of support that they might need throughout their lifetimes. One is called Supplemental Security Income, and the other is Medicaid. Again, healthcare and income support. But in order to qualify for those means-tested benefits, you have to be essentially broke. So part of the planning that revolves around is a special needs trust, an estate planning tool that you can set up, are to provide a vehicle into which you can put assets to help support an adult with a disability, but without disqualifying them from the SSI and the Medicaid benefits.
And I think that's a really important distinction, right? Because as you indicated, the income limits are very low, right, to qualify for some of these programs. And we have found that many people accidentally disqualify themselves from benefits that they may otherwise have been entitled to. And they may not be sufficient, those benefits on their own, but they're certainly valuable, right? There is value in those.
Yes. A colleague of mine who's estimated the lifetime value of Medicaid and Supplemental Security Income suggests that over a period of two or three decades, it could be worth more than $1 million. And for most of the families that I talk to that have these issues to deal with, they can't afford to give up that extra $1 million worth of public support. When you have a family member with a disability, more likely than not, it decreases the household income and it increases the household expenses. So those public benefits can be a vital part of providing support for that family and the person with the disability going forward. So you don't want that to be undermined. But to give you an example, if a young adult is living with a disability and they're 25, 30 years old, and they've been receiving SSI and Medicaid benefits for some time, then if they happen to inherit money from a grandparent or rich uncle or a parent who passes away prematurely, then that money that somebody leaves to them directly might not actually do them any good, because the state will have a claim against that money to repay themselves for the benefits that they previously received.
Wow. Best of intent, right? No good deed goes unpunished, right? The best of intentions may actually end up hurting the person that you were really trying to serve. And so careful planning here and having the right mechanisms in place is critical to making sure that things actually go the way you'd like them to, right? And it sounds like that means all parties really need to be coordinated, and whatever vehicle you choose is the best for your family is really thoughtful and purposeful, right? There's lots of different types of trusts and special needs trusts, right, that I know you have expertise in, and maybe you can share a little bit about why it's critical to choose the right one and how that can really impact the control mechanisms and sort of the how it layers into the other benefits that are available.
Yes, exactly right. When I first started working in this area, there were many, many estate planning attorneys who really didn't have a clue about this. Thankfully, over the past three decades, the awareness about these issues around planning for people with disabilities has grown. And there are fewer attorneys who are likely to create the wrong type of trust for a family that is dealing with these issues. But I think as a good example, the law firm that does work for our clients, when they do an estate plan for a typical household that doesn't currently have any kind of disability issue, they include in their standard typical documents a provision that allows any trust that is created in that estate plan to be converted to a special needs trust if the need arises in the family's network. So I've not been aware of other law firms that have done the same sort of thing, but that's a clear indication of the increasing awareness about these needs in the society and how we need to incorporate the possibility of beneficiaries developing disabilities to be protected and have those public benefits protected as well.
Absolutely. So really important that as you're thinking through this, if you're listening and saying, this is something that might impact me or my life or my family, it's really important that you have these provisos in place and that you actually work with someone who's an expert in this space to say, how do I take care of, as Chris points out, right? The first thing is prevent the worst case scenario from happening, right? Understand all the different benefits that are available to you, ensure that they stay protected and that they remain in place for the person who needs them. And then, Chris, we can get into, right, enhancing that financial plan to say, okay, we've taken maybe care of basic needs. Now, how do we help this person that we love that has these challenges? How do we make sure that their quality of life is really what we want it to be? And that's where really a lot of advanced planning comes into the picture, right?
Right. And I would say the next phase, right after you've prevented the financial disaster by getting the right type of estate plan in place and maybe purchasing the right insurance to guarantee that it'll be funded appropriately, then you turn your attention to just the basic financial planning issues. And there's a significant difference in families that have relatives with disabilities. You can think of it in terms of reframing the calculations you do around your retirement. Many couples, their retirement planning is a plan meant for two people. The typical story is you support your kiddos, you get them to a point where they launch and become independent and self-supporting. If one of your kiddos happens to have a disability of some sort, then maybe your retirement plan is planned for three people. And one of those three is likely to take early retirement. So again, you need a financial plan just as anybody could benefit from it, but you need one that is a little more pumped up than a typical plan. So the good news is that all the basic planning principles still apply. You just need to provide a little extra oomph to save a little bit more as a percentage of your income, to maybe make some tweaks and some changes along the way to provide a bigger pool of assets, maybe a bit sooner than a typical household would. So that is, again, an area where working closely with a financial planner can help you make better choices and optimize your earning power and optimize your savings along the way, so you get that more robust asset base to work with. With that underway, you can get to the fun part, right? Which is doing the same thing for your relative with a disability that you do for yourself, is help them dream their dreams and help them explore and discover the things that make life meaningful for them and help them make those dreams happen. So that's been one of the interesting things that I've learned in living my life alongside my son, who happens to have Down syndrome, right, is had to learn that you don't want to discount their dreams, because, you know, a lot of people with disabilities have different ways of getting there. They have a knack for seeing that their dreams happen, right? And so you want to help them do their planning, help them dream their dreams and work, do the hard work to make them happen, right?
And that's such a great point, Chris. And I know it's a personal one for you, but acknowledging that the person who has this disability is a fully formed person too, with their own thoughts and hopes and dreams, and addressing that within the plan, right? It's not, as you said, if it's mom, dad, and a child with a disability, it may very well be planning for three instead of two, but it doesn't mean that they can't also achieve many of the same things that would be important to you when you retire, as an example. And ergo, there may need to be some more sophisticated planning. There may need to be a bigger pot of money. There may need to be more protections in place, but it doesn't mean that it's not achievable. I think it's just something that's not always addressed in the planning process if they get to this point, right, of actually trying to put a good plan in place. Many of the plans stop at the basic needs protection.
Right. And I think, you know, the key to helping clients with disabilities achieve their financial freedom and achieve some of their major life goals, the key to that is inclusion. Because that's what you want for your relative with a disability, is for them to become an integral part of a supportive community, because that's how we make our dreams come true, right? Nobody does it by themselves. You do it as part of a community, part of a network. You do it in community. And so I think there are four cornerstones of an inclusive, integrated life. There's education, recreation, housing, and employment. And over the course of the last 50 years, we've seen people with disabilities get access to a free, appropriate public education. The public school system has really acted as pushing the frontier on including kids with disabilities in the school community. And a lot of good has come from that, both for students with disability and also for their typical peers, because I know that typical students benefit from the inclusion of people with significant learning differences and other disabilities in their community. It's a two-way street, and benefits flow both directions. In recreation, I think there are a number of inclusive recreational programs. The one that I think of first is off at Special Olympics, and the progress that's been made over the decades with that program, where something that started in somebody's backyard, literally, it now gets regular network TV coverage when they have the World Games, you know, and there are millions and millions of people all around the world that participate in that program. And that, too, is a great avenue, a great venue in which people with disabilities and typical peers join together in sports, which is a very important mechanism.
It's a great unifier and a humbling experience for all involved. And as someone who had the pleasure of working with some Special Olympians during his collegiate playing days, as someone who fancied themselves to be a pretty decent athlete in his day, it is a humbling experience too, when you realize that there are other athletes that are just as competitive as you, whether you've realized it or not, right, Chris?
Yeah, that experience of competitiveness, the opportunity to develop friendships and sportsmanship, all of those things are good and important ways for building community and for providing awesome experiences for people with disabilities of various sorts. We've seen a lot of progress both in education and in recreation. The other two aspects of this, housing and employment, those are still very much cutting edge, sort of pioneer territory, right? There's a lot of work to be done to ensure that people with disabilities have good housing options and also employment opportunities. So that is really kind of cutting edge stuff at this point, but lots of interesting work happening in those areas, right? In some communities, there have been changes in laws to require that a certain number, and with any new development, any new residential development, certain percentage of units have to be set aside for people with low incomes. And that's often the case for people with disabilities. So there's a tremendous shortage of housing units for supportive housing. There's a local nonprofit here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area that has done a study of the need in just the four counties surrounding Dallas and Fort Worth. And they've come up with like a 85,000 units short of the actual need, right? So All across the country, I think it's a similar story where adults with disabilities are quite often living with family members who ultimately may not be there for them. And that may not be the most supportive and viable long-term housing option for them. That's an area that requires a lot of creative thought these days, right? It's hard to come up with those good choices.
And obviously it has financial implications too, right? So at the root of it all, right? Access and options limited, and then the financial viability of it too, right? So hearing more and more from what you're sharing, Chris, the need for real meaningful planning to actually address some of these concerns. And obviously various stages of disabilities and needs and what people's care might require, this may not all apply to you, but if you're seeking to provide a meaningful experience for your family member or loved one or whomever that you're supporting here, this is a key element to that.
Yeah, just as important as it is for typical family to own the right size house with the right size mortgage and manage their finances in making a home for themselves. Three-person retirement might also be a two-house retirement as well. So if you're aware of that and you make provisions for that over a longer period of time, it's just easier to get there if you get clued in about what your goals should be sooner rather than later. On the employment side, this is an area in which you see the inclusion that's happened in the educational context is now spilling over into the employment context. The people that have grown up in an inclusive school setting know about including people with disabilities into everyday life, and they expect to see that happen on the job site as well as in other places. That awareness and that expectation has been documented and quantified by consulting firm McKinsey and Company. They've done a number of studies about this, and something like 80 to 90% of consumers would prefer to do business with companies that employ people with disabilities. Other studies that McKinsey has done has showed that the inclusion of people with disabilities in the workforce creates changes in company culture that are also net positive.
It really is a two-way street, right? That's the beauty of this work that we get to do and helping folks with disabilities be included in the most meaningful way possible, right? It is a valuable experience for everybody involved. And the data backs that up, right? That's not just John and Chris saying, we think this. It's saying the feedback, the data, the real information says, hey, this is true, right? And so again, a critical part of planning for that, and not always easiest to solve for, right, Chris? You rightly point out some of the deficiencies in these spaces. But if you can be a part of that and help make that happen, it can do two things, right? Obviously create a more enriching experience for the person that's important to you, but it also can help from a financial perspective with the planning, right? With some of this independence and allow certain things to happen that may not have otherwise been possible. So I'm really glad that you're addressing these four cornerstones of how you approach this planning process.
As I've continued to work in this area, just the most recent updates that I've done in my own research, I've been surprised by things that I found. There was another study that McKinsey did that is as relevant as the topic of the labor market coming out of the pandemic. What they concluded was that an equitable economic recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic would include Americans with disabilities as part of the solution to the labor shortage that we have. And the future growth of the U.S. economy would be strengthened if we incorporate more people with disabilities as active participants on the job. Their research indicated that expanding the labor force participation among Americans with disabilities could add over $200 billion to the U.S. GDP by 2040.
And that's an astonishing number, but I guess logically, intuitively, it really does make sense, right? If the data the CDC shares with us is accurate, which we have to presume it is that if one in four Americans are going to be faced with living with a disability, it's going to be imperative that we include all of these Americans in all of the aspects of American life, and including the workforce, right? And including homes and all of these things, social life, right? It's a big part of our population. And so it's critical that we find the mechanisms and ways for the success of the country that this is addressed and planned for, right? And I think the reason I was really excited to have you come on today is because we know from our own experience in working with families that it is really not often properly addressed. And mistakes and underplanning in this space can create really negative outcomes for both the individual with the disability, but also for the entire family, right? And that creates untold potential financial problems for maybe countless generations as they recover from maybe insufficient planning in this space.
Right. I think families that have an unexpected diagnosis, right? When you just discover that all of a sudden, oh, wait a minute, our situation has changed. A lot of times, initially, you're just overwhelmed and you have a lot more to deal with, right? Especially if you have significant medical issues, which can often be the driver in these circumstances. And it is far too easy just to stay overwhelmed because of all of the additional complexity of managing medical conditions, of managing a special education program with more meetings and more input and more feedback and all of that. So families may just never get around to really becoming aware of some of these other issues and figuring out how to deal with them. That's where we can help a family that has these issues get up to speed on what the important questions are to be asked, and then get them pointed in the right direction in terms of coming up with answers to those important questions. Then switch their attention back to more important things, more fun things.
One of the things that you talk about in the framework of having this layer of protection is that you really do need to protect against major causes of financial turmoil. And they can be very different for families that have a member with a disability than maybe a family without. Can you talk a little bit about what some of those additional risks are and why there are some certain things that they need to plan for that maybe others don't when it comes to insurances?
The function of life insurance in general is just to guarantee that the financial plan you've made is completed, regardless of whether or not you make the journey yourself all the way through the completion date. If you think a life insurance need is typically, well, how much money do I need to have saved up to take care of the people I care about who are financially dependent upon me? In many households today, right, you've got more than one breadwinner. Each of those partners' income needs to be protected and need to be replaced if something should happen to them and leave the other people missing that income. When you're talking about that retirement plan for three, it means that the savings you want to accumulate is going to be maybe bigger than a typical household's. And so you probably need more life insurance than your neighbors that don't have a kiddo with a disability. And it needs to be the right type of insurance as well. You want it to be an efficient long-term savings vehicle for you, because having a relative with disability means you probably have a much greater need for a permanent type of life insurance than someone whose kids are going to grow up and become independent. And that life insurance need for a typical household is a limited term risk. And so term insurance is often a perfect match for that. when you're looking at life insurance to replace the income for someone whose dependency may last, you know, more than a couple of decades, then you probably are going to want to have some element of long-term permanent insurance as well.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Chris. It's important to understand the distinction and the longevity of what the need is, and understand that you just have to work with an expert to help make sure that you have the right protections in place for the unique needs of your family. And they may look different than someone who isn't in your situation, right? Who has a different family dynamic than you do. It's not enough to just make sure the economic element is there to create good outcomes, right? The other part that you suggest, which I think is brilliant, is that there should be some sort of an operational manual for the household, right? Because if you are the primary caregiver and now something has happened to you, while you may feel safe and assured that now the financial resources are taken care of, maybe the work that you did and the outcomes that you wanted require much more, right? Someone may be filling your void, but not know your routines and your processes and what actually helped your family member thrive. If you could share a little bit about your thoughts on that, because I think that's such a critical distinction, right? If we're looking truly for good outcomes, it's not enough to just say, okay, here's a few million dollars that'll cover the bills for the next 20 years, even when I'm not there and I've done my job, right? If you really want meaningful outcomes, there's another step that you highlight that I think is really important.
Yeah, just as a family that has a family member with a disability may need a little bit more life insurance than their neighbors. They may need to save a little bit higher percentage of their income than the neighbors. So too, these families need to be a little bit more rigorously organized. They need to be a little bit better organized than a typical family as well, because just having a manual that somebody could pick up in order to figure out how to do what you've been doing for your kiddo with a disability if you're not able to do it. What are the prescriptions? What's the daily routine? What do you absolutely need to know to make this household work and to help this person be supported in the life that they're accustomed to? This is also true between couples, right? The task is sufficiently large and complicated that tasks get divvied up. A husband may not be completely familiar with how his wife is doing the things that she's taking care of, and vice versa. So it's important to kind of create a trail of breadcrumbs that somebody else could follow so that the prescriptions get filled and doled out appropriately. Who are the doctors? What's the plan? How do you make this household work?
And I think it's such an important thing. And you say it could be a little more burdensome. And frankly, if you ask my wife and I how we make this household tick, I don't know that I could tell you. Sometimes it's not planning at all, right? Sometimes it's just figure it out as we go. But when you're caring for someone who has maybe different needs, the onus may be on you, right? To have a better documents filing system, to have a good keeper of your medical records, a logbook with everything that happens, making sure there's a known plan where as you said, who are the doctors? Where are the medicines? How do we do all of these things? Because whether it's a spouse or another caregiver, or just if that person does lose the support that they previously had or becomes more independent, right? Regardless of what the path is, it's really important that somewhere there is a manual, as you call it, of just a central place that says, hey, this is all the essentials. This is how we actually help best support this person to have the best life possible. Because if something happens, you're going to need to know this and I won't be there to tell you.
Right. It can be the foundation for a base of support to allow that person to become more and more independent. If you can put tools in place that help them manage their own life without your being there, that's the extension of this sort of basic organizational thing, right? You want to have a password manager, right? Because it's not just a matter of inconvenience if somebody can't open the computer where some critical information resides. It could be a matter of life and death. So yeah, that's an ongoing process. There's an author who's talked about this process as creating a digital backup system for the things that we do for one another.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Chris, and a really valuable point. So Chris, before I let you go from this great conversation we'll be having, any final thoughts before we end our chat together?
You know, I think looking back over the experience that we've all shared in the past 2 or 3 years, I think that We've recognized that the whole society is vulnerable in some ways that we didn't appreciate before. And we've made changes in our lives to accommodate that vulnerability. We figured out ways to stay on the job, to keep doing things that added value for others. And I think now it puts us in a place where we can see that there's absolutely no reason not to provide that same opportunity for the most vulnerable members of society as well, to include them in lives that are by their own measure, a good life, where they have their share of joy and sorrow with opportunities to be themselves, to make their unique contributions to the life of a community that supports and values them. Even if their net worth never exceeds $2,000, sound financial planning can help make that happen.
Chris, your passion and drive to make this happen and have good outcomes for folks with these needs couldn't come through more clearly, and it's been my absolute privilege to have you join the program today. Chris Curran, who's certified financial planner and senior wealth advisor, part of our great Mercer team out of Dallas-Fort Worth, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, John.
Chris shared a lot of great information with us today, both from his own personal experience and our experience in helping countless families navigate this really challenging situation. There's no doubt that planning for folks that have special needs is complex, and it takes a little bit more sophisticated planning and preparation. And it's really critical that you do it for the success of you and your family. So if what we talked about has you asking questions, or if this is a need that your family has that you're not sure you've actually properly addressed, we'd love to hear from you, and we're absolutely here to help. So please call me or anyone from our great team here at the Cordasco Financial Network at 855-558-3500. That's 855-558-3500. Or you can email us at asksteve@cfnplan.com. That's asksteve@cfnplan.com. I'm John Walker from the Cordasco Financial Network, part of Mercer Advisors. Thanks so much for listening to the Your Life, Your Wealth podcast. Have a great week.
If you're interested in learning more about applying the principles we discussed to your personal financial circumstances, please visit Cordasco Financial Network at cfnplan.com.